Blue Net fans, and welcome to another edition of the Terry Collins Show, presented by Tunnel to Towers. Supporting America's greatest heroes, donate just $11 per month by going to T2T.org. That's T, the number 2T.org. I'm John Arezzi, and joining me, back from a very busy week in New York, former skipper of the New York Mets, analyst for SNY's Baseball Night in New York, direct from his home in Florida, Terry Collins. Terry, how you doing today? Incredibly busy week for you in New York.
Yeah, it was, John. I, you know, had the two TV shows, then Fanatics Fest, and then an autograph session at Westchester. And of course, yesterday, trying to get out with that from the storm on Sunday night, I had 4-hour delay. So I slept well last night, I can tell you.
Yeah, I'm in New York myself, and that rain was torrential. Glad you made it home safe. Well, Terry, we're going to talk about the Mets' current homestand before they head out to their West Coast trip, the last one of 2024. We'll talk about your big appearance coming up this weekend at T-Squared Social. But you've lined up another great Mets legend for this week's Talking with TC. Tell us who it is.
Yeah, it's one of my real good friends and one of the great, really great Mets and great players in the big leagues for a long time. Lee Mazzilli is going to be on. Lee's a diehard baseball guy. Every time I'm with him, we talk for hours about baseball. He's fun to be around. And, of course, lifelong New Yorker, a great fan of the Mets, great fan of the Yankees. So it'd be exciting to have him on.
Yeah, absolutely. But let's get right to the leadoff, Terry. The Mets are finishing up their 9-game homestand, winning 2-3 against the Marlins, losing 2-3 against the A's. Last night could have been the most uplifting win of the season as we tape this on August the 20th, when Francisco Alvarez hit a monster of a blast to give the Mets a 4-3 walk-off win against the Baltimore Orioles. It was huge. His first walk-off of his career. Question for you, can a big walk-off like this create a spark that maybe has a carryover effect as the Mets finish this series against the O's before they head out to play San Diego and Arizona?
You know, John, the other day they had a loss against the Oakland A's that everybody said, it's the worst loss of the season. It's, just a horrible loss. Last night might have been one of the most biggest wins they have all season. You know, that's the first game of a very, very grueling 9 days where they got to go to San Diego and Arizona where they're facing two teams that are red hot. The Orioles are, you know, even though they haven't been great here in the last month, but they are still a very, very good team, very young but very talented. To pull that game out last night was not only good for the Mets, but very, very big for Alvarez. You know, he's been a little bit of a slump. Hasn't hit with the power that he did last year, and I think a lot of it's due to the injury he had early in the season. But a big win for both people, and I think hopefully this kick starts a big 9 days for them.
Yeah, we've seen Alvarez get hot before, and when he gets hot, he gets hot.
Yeah, he can hit. He got to the big leagues because he could hit. And they were all, if you remember a year ago, everybody was saying, well, you know, we all know he can hit, but is he going to be able to catch Scherzer? Is he going to be able to catch Verlander? All he did was jump in there and educate himself to what it takes to be a big league catcher. And he had great leadership with some of the people around him to tell him what it takes to catch those great guys and won their confidence over to the point where now everybody wants to pitch to him. But his offense has slipped down a little bit this year. You know, but some of that also may come with the fact that it's the old sophomore thing. You know, last year everybody kind of found out how to pitch this guy, and now you got to adjust. And that's all part of the growing process at the major league level is learn how to lay off some things, learn how to find your pitch, and then do damage with it. But I just saw last night with that excitement at the end of the game, I think it's going to be a great, great step for him moving forward.
Oh, yeah. I hope it has a great carryover effect, and it was wonderful to see that celebration after that walk-off. The Mets dodged a bullet when Brandon Nimmo's MRI came back clean. He made a fabulous catch on Sunday's game, felt a little pain in the shoulder. They did the MRI, came back clean, and Starling Marte comes back to the team as well with his injury now hopefully done, and he could get back competing. So it looks like the Mets' depth is really, really strong right now, Terry. So their depth right now, you have to compare it to what's going on with the Braves. The Braves are losing guys like all the time. They just lost Austin Riley for 6 to 8 weeks with a fracture of the hand. They've lost Ozzie Albies. They've lost Acuna. till next year. Spencer Strider. So the Mets have really got to take advantage of the Braves now. What's your assessment on what's going on with the Braves? And is it time for the Mets to make that move and hopefully catch up to Atlanta? They're only a game and a half out right now, that third wild.
Yeah, you know, and John, we've talked about this before. You know, nobody feels sorry for in the big leagues. When you go through these rash of injuries and the Braves have lost, key players, you know, even Fried. You know, this guy was as good a pitcher as in the big leagues. He's now, you know, he's having ups and downs. And so you've got to take advantage of this, you know, and make a move on him right now because, you know, they're not going to have Albies for a while. Riley's going to be out. Acuna's out. You know, they lost Michael Harris for quite a while. You know, they're signing any way they can. It was a veteran who's used to playing at the major league level to try to get him through the rest of the season. But this is the time to make a move on the Braves. And, you know, and again, don't worry about looking at that scoreboard. You got to take care of business yourself, especially during this particular 9-game stretch where, guess what? Those other teams you're going to play, they're fighting for playoffs too. So it should be really, really fun to watch in the next 10 days.
Yeah, San Diego, Arizona, then finishing up against the Chicago White Sox. So it should be a really interesting road trip that the Mets are about to embark on. But, TC, we had gotten some news this week from Tunnel to Towers, our sponsor. Registration is now open for their 23rd annual Tunnel to Towers 5K run walk, which is going to be held in New York City, September the 29th. So people can now register for that. The event retraces the heroic footsteps of firefighter Stephen Siller, Frank Siller's brother. On 9/11, Siller ran through the Brooklyn Battery Tunnel to the towers where he was killed. The foundation was started in his memory, and that's where the name Tunnel to Towers comes from. The T2T 5K event began with just 1,500 people in 2002, Terry, and now considered one of the top 5K runs in America, they anticipate 40,000 people participating.
I'll have to get my running shoes on, John. You know, I used to be a big-time runner. You know, a few years ago, I ran miles every day. So I kind of got away from it for a while. I may have to get back into it so I can be a part of that crowd.
There you go. I've seen you actually down in Florida working that treadmill and stuff down there. You are very, very active for sure. So, yeah, that's a wonderful event. T2T.org. Register there right now. And one other note from Tunnel, the first responder hockey teams from across the New York area competing for the Heroes Cup at the Menin Arena in Morristown, New Jersey. Must-see event takes place Saturday, September 14th. Proceeds will benefit T2T. And we'll be back with This Week in Mets History as we wrap up this leadoff after this word from Terry Collins for Tunnel to Towers.
Hi, I'm Terry Collins, former manager of the New York Mets. Tunnel to Towers Foundation gives the city of New York something they can actually hold on to that's really a part of them. You know, my dad was a vet, and if you've not been in the service, you have no idea what it means to sacrifice everything for a group. Those are the real heroes in the world. Let's go Mets, and let's help the Tunnel to Towers Foundation.
Go to T2T.org for more information about how your donation can make a difference.
All right, Terry, let's check out This Week in Mets History. We just talked about some of the injuries the Mets had and what the Braves are going through, but you had a situation that took place on August 16th, 2017. Jose Reyes and Wilmer Flores were both out of the lineup. Catcher Travis d'Arnaud is forced to be an emergency infielder. Throughout the course of that game, d'Arnaud and Asdrubal Cabrera switched from between second base and third base 22 times, Terry. D'Arnaud even got special permission to use David Wright's glove on that game. Terry, go back in time and talk to us why those moves were made because of the injuries, obviously.
Well, you know, John, it all started many, many years ago when I was playing in AAA. You know, back then we only had 21 or 22 players on your team, and I was the guy who was the utility guy. I played all over, and there was a game where I played four positions in one inning because we were short players. We had a backup catcher in. We used one of our pitchers at another position, and so I went from, depending on who was up, went from position to position to position. I said, so this particular night, the one thing I wanted to try to weigh is get to stay away from is poor Travis being put in a position where, you know, he's uncomfortable playing second base in a double play situation, you know, or he's got to turn a double play, he could get hurt out there. So I decided I'll move those two guys. If it was a right-handed hitter up, I'll put Travis at second. You know, give him time to adjust. He can knock the ground ball down and throw the guy out, where I could put Asdrubal at third. And if there's a left-handed, it'll reverse it. If there was a double play situation, I'd have to play Asdrubal at second. So, yeah, it was just something to move around. I teased him after the game was over. I said, you know, I only did this to overmanage the game. You know, you always get a manager of overmanaging. So I wanted to make sure everybody knew that at least I was thinking of something during the game.
Wow. Well, thanks for that recollection, Terry. And you can check out Mets history anytime on social media by going to @NYMHistory on both X and Instagram. And now it's time for another Talkin' with TC. When our special guest signed with the New York Mets in 1973 as a first-round selection, the 14th pick overall in the draft, Met fans immediately took to this switch-hitting phenom. His matinee idol looks and being born and bred New Yorker made him an instant fan favorite. He stole a record-breaking 7 bases in one game as a minor leaguer in 1975. He made his Mets debut in 1976 and competed for them during a rather dark period in franchise history, eventually getting traded in 1981 to the Texas Rangers for Ron Darling and Walt Terrell. He made a triumphant return to a very different team in 1986 and was there for that amazing run that year when the Mets won it all. He remained with the Mets until 1989, and after finishing up with his playing career, became a coach for the New York Yankees. He also managed the Baltimore Orioles. He remains a big part of Mets history and an all-time Mets fan favorite. It's a pleasure to welcome to Talking with TC, Lee Mazzilli. Lee, welcome to the Terry Collins Show.
Thank you. Thank you. Good to be with you, TC.
Well, we're glad to have you on, Lee. I appreciate your time today. And yeah, no, I know you're still involved. And, you know, it's always been amazing to me. You're one of probably, you know, there are guys who've played, you know, with both the Mets and the Yankees. But, you know, no, I'm not sure there's very many who were born and raised in New York to play with both franchises. So, you know, what was it like back then to, you know, be a New Yorker? And I don't know which one of the teams was your favorite at the time, but, you know, to have the opportunity to work for both clubs and, you know, compare the different organizations and the different fan bases, what was it like?
Yeah, it was special. I guess I would say I was blessed, just being lucky. You know, I grew up in Brooklyn. I got drafted by the Mets, and I really wasn't a Met or Yankee fan, to be honest with you. I was a Giant fan growing up, but I loved the Mets. I loved the Yankees. I just loved baseball. I wasn't really associated with saying I was just a Met fan or Yankee fan. It was surreal, you know, being 18 and then you graduate and 2 years later, you're playing in the big leagues with Tom Seaver, Kuzman, Matlock. Joe Torre was my teammate. It's kind of weird, to be honest with you, playing in your backyard. But it was special, you know. At the time I came up, you know, the Mets was still a contending ball club in 1976 with those players. And then in 77, that's kind of when they dismantled the club and started to rebuild. But, you know, I look back now, and, you know, getting older and stuff, and I really, TC, I really say, I was kind of lucky, you know, playing in your backyard. And that's all I knew. So playing in New York was completely different than playing in any other city by far. But I was lucky. I mean, you got to have a little luck in life. And, you know, growing up, people keep asking me, you ask this question, well, if you didn't play, what would you do or be doing? I can never give an answer to that. Because I never thought of anything other than playing baseball. It's kind of weird. I don't know what I'd be doing. It never entered my mind that I would not play. I don't know if that makes sense or not.
Yeah, yeah, you know, Lee, one of the things that I've seen through the years, and, you know, I've always wondered, because I got to know you and we became friends. Yeah. You know, for me, even though the game has changed, obviously, in some drastic names, but the old style player, the old pro, I mean, here's a guy, here you are, you're looking at today, and everybody's making a big deal of the Jackson Holiday kid who was 20 years old, is now in Baltimore, and, you know, they're all saying, wow, you know, you want the youngest guy, you know, you were 20 back then when veterans were, I mean, the minor leagues, there were guys stuck in the minor leagues because there were no free agencies. Guys weren't moving around. I mean, to get to the big leagues as fast as you get, I would think today that knowledge and that, you know, what you experience would be unbelievably helpful in certain organizations.
Yeah. One, like I said, you know, coming up early, but look who I came up with and who I was surrounded by to learn the game of baseball, just like you did when you started with the Dodgers. I mean, you had Koufax around and Drysdale. I mean, and I had Seaver, Kuzma, Torrey, Buddy Harrelson were teammates, and Dave Kingman. So I learned so much at an early age, and I wasn't ready when I came up, obviously. I don't think you ever are. You kind of in awe of a lot of stuff in these players. But I'll tell you, TC, I learned a lot about hitting from Tom Seaver. I learned a lot of hitting from John Matlack. And they would spend time with me teaching me or telling me in Kuzman how they would pitch hitters and how they would set up guys. And so I really did. You would think the opposite, but no, man, I learned a lot about hitting from those great pitchers, Hall of Fame pitchers. So, you're overwhelmed when you came up. I remember the first day I came up, they said you weren't going to play. You just wanted you to get the feel of the ballparks. And Joe Torre took me right under his wing and, you know, he said, you stay with me. And I've been staying with him for about 50 years now. Been that long. And then all of a sudden, the first day, the first game, and you know, I got to get in, go up and pinch hit. And I was scared to death, absolutely scared to death, you know. Like I said, you know, a couple of years removed, now you're playing with Tom Seaver. He's probably one of the greatest pitchers of all time. And I'm like, he's dressing right next to me, you know. And you're in the same locker room. So it took a while. It took a little bit of, you feel like you're walking on eggshells when you first come in with veteran players. But there's that experience factor that these guys have that it's really, you know, like Willie Mays was one of my coaches in the minor leagues. Can you beat that? You know? And I've always said this, it was like 6 degrees of separation. What Willie told me about base stealing, base running, maybe, you know, Jackie Robinson told Willie about his base running. And then Willie took it and passed it down and then passed it down to me and I would pass it down. With Joe Torre would talk about hitting. And so that 6 degrees of separation was so important. And I think, and I can't put my finger on it, but I think that's what's missing in today's game. Because I can't take, give me your knowledge. Tell me what you did when you were managing in Anaheim or whatever, and then you're going here, and you had this problem with this player. You can share that with me and pass that knowledge, which you learn. I don't know if that's there today. I don't know.
Well, you know, Lee, when, of course, you managed in the big leagues, and, you know, for years, you know, it took experience before you even were considered for a Major League Madison job. I mean, you know, I spent, 9 years as a minor league manager, 6 of them in AAA, you know, and so used to see things and talk to different guys. And you'd say, you know, I kind of like what that guy did there. And you'd remember that. And then you might say, you know what, I didn't like that. I'm never going to use that. I mean, you learn along the way, but yet you still, because of the fraternity of what it's like to be a big league player or a big league coach or big league manager, the fraternity is so small. Everybody's willing to share ideas, you know, and I think, so that's how, you know, back then we learned and tried to use different ideas to, you know, whether it be, you know, base running or hitting or pitching, you know, I always wanted to surround myself with good coaches and say, you know what, guys, here's your job. I'm going to watch, but you're going to coach it. I'm going to stay out of that stuff because that's your expertise. And, you know, I hear you talk about how, you know, Tom Seaver talked to you. You know, one time I remember Rod Carew was my hitting coach when I was in Anaheim, and Troy Percival, who was one of the better relievers in the game, went to Rod and said, so if you had to face me, what would you be looking for?
Right.
I would think, you know, guys like yourself, who, especially being a switch hitter, I mean, and, you know, all the experience you had, I would think pitchers would come to you all the time and say, hey, look, what would you be looking for me? Did that ever happen?
Yeah. Not to the degree where it happened for me. I think it was more of me listening to them. But you're right about paying your dues. I mean, I spent 3 years in the minor leagues managing as well, and it was probably the greatest thing that I did, because I think they wanted to test me. See, well, let's see if he's willing to pay the price, if he really wants to coach or manage. And, you know, the minor leagues are a tough life. It's not an easy life. And I did that when my kids were like six. I had three. I had twins, and there were six and nine, and I had to leave. And I remember Joe asking me, what do I want to do? And he said, well, I want to get back to managing. I was out a few years. And he said, all right, let's see. I think we have a spot open with the Yankees. Are you interested? And my wife was the one that really kicked me out the door, leaving the kids, because she said, this is what you want to do. You got to get it out of your system. You got to get it out and see if this is what you really want to do. TC, I was not crazy about leaving kids when I were young. And it was very hard. And when I did go, Ethan, my wife and I, we kind of made a pact of, you know, let's not go more than 3 weeks without being together, because it's not an easy life. But by doing that, I had the chance to learn how to manage a bullpen, manage personalities of people. It was completely different. Now, you're a good baseball man. You know the game of baseball. And I can tell you right now, and I know you're going to attest to this, you don't know anything about managing until you sit behind that desk. Nothing. There's some great baseball minds out there. But until you sit behind that desk, it's a whole different game, because you're answering to everyone, media, front office, scouts. So for me, that time was pretty good. I didn't want to be there, honestly. You know, you wanted to make it right away. But it was a very valuable time spending in the minor leagues, and I was lucky to have some pretty good players with the Yankees when I managed there, and it was very enjoyable. I mean, but being away is hard. You know, it's a tough life.
Yeah, I mean, I can certainly attest to that. Yeah. I mean, I spent a long time in the minor leagues, but you know, that's what we chose. That's what I chose. So you know, it became you know, my career. It was, hey, look, you know, I've got to try to advance and learn as much as I can.
Right.
And ultimately it paid huge dividends. But you're right. You know, people don't understand, especially in the minor leagues. I mean, you got guys going up and going down. Yeah. So, you know, you got to tell a player, hey, you're going to the big leagues. That's a great one. And then you got a player coming down. You got to talk to him. And he's mad at everybody. He's mad at the world. And you got to get him to play. So, yeah, that the experiences of a minor league manager, I mean, are invaluable. And in today's game, you know, I watch a lot of minor league games, and you know, they don't manage. They don't have to manage. Yeah. They're told who to pitch, when to pitch them, how much they're supposed to pitch, and there's none of that gut feeling about, you know, when to take a guy out or it, there was a time I remember when I was managing the minor leagues, and I pinch hit a guy, and there was one of our scouts was there, and he said, "Don't ever pinch hit the minor leagues." I said, "What?" He said, "Don't ever pinch hit the minor leagues." I said, "Well, don't you think that guy's got to learn that sometime in his career he's going to get pinch hit for?"
Sure.
So you know, there's all sorts of things today that we learned in the minor leagues that you had to know and had to know how to deal with those situations when they came up in the big leagues.
Yeah, unfortunately, I think a lot of it is predetermined already. You don't go on the whim. I mean, baseball, if like you and I have been on the outside now looking at, so we know the inner workings of a game. So it's very easy for us or anyone else to sit up in the booth and watch the game and say, how come he didn't pinch hit him? Why didn't he bring him in? And you think baseball is slow, a slow game, but we know in the dugout how quick the game moves and very fast. But we also know why we didn't pinch hit this guy, for obvious reasons, whatever reasons there may be, and then you're second guessed for that. So then we have to take the hit of why we didn't use a particular player in a particular spot. when the obvious is there. So, yeah. And so until you're in that dugout, you really can't manage the game. You really can't. I mean, yes, but you really don't know what's going on. And you and I have been around 50 years, and we can still say that right now. And you and I can say right now, we don't know what Mendoza, what the problem is in the dugout, why he didn't hit this guy. We can say that. We don't know.
Yeah, that's for sure. I mean, that was, you know, that's the other thing. There are things that happen behind the scenes that, you know, you can't, like, I remember one time I wanted, you know, the writers, I had to, certainly in our announcing team, you know, I had a guy who was, couldn't play, I didn't want the other team to know he couldn't play. So you've got to be able to somehow protect that situation and not, you know, during the game be second guessed and say, well, he's got to hit this guy when, hey, that guy's unavailable.
So, yeah, for me, managing was the closest thing that I was ever going to get back to playing again. That's how I felt. I just loved it. I loved the chess match. It really got you back. It wasn't the same as coaching. Coaching was different. But as a manager, I think that was the closest thing that I felt like I was playing again. Yeah, it was a nice feeling. Yeah. But it's different.
So during your playing career, switch hitter, who were the toughest guys you had to face?
That's easy. Nolan Ryan, Tom Seaver, Steve Carlton, J.R. Richard. I mean, you're talking about guys that would knock you down if you swung too hard. If you swung too hard, they'd knock you down. You remember Bill Singer?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So we were playing a game one time. I was a rookie. First camp I'm going to, we were playing in the old Dunedin Stadium. And I think it was the Tigers who used to have a minor league camp there, but I think the Blue Jays just took that over. It was an old, you know, the stadium, but it was really an old high school field. Bill Singer was pitching. That happened to lead off the first game, exhibition game of the spring, and got lucky, and hit a home run. Next time up, he drilled me in the head.
Bill
spring
Singer?
Training. Spring training. And we didn't have any class. You know, it was like, you know, suck it up. You know? But, yeah, it was a different game. And, you know, I remember when I made it. You know, we worked on taking guys out at second base. You know, you go in spring training, and they would teach you the roll block and all that, like the Dodgers did in the sliding pits. Yeah, you know, and they would teach you how to take guys out. And I remember a time of playing at Shea Stadium, and I was going into second base, and I didn't get the guy, and I come back to the dugout. And Jerry Kuzma, God bless him, he's one of my favorite teammates in the world, Jerry Kuzma. He goes, you got to take him out. I went, I am. No, but he was like, you got to take him out. And in a good way, not in a bad way, in a good way. And he, like I said, he was one of my favorite teammates. I remember when just hitting him, if I was brushed back or anything, he'd come over to me and go, I might get him for you. Want me to get them for you? Like, no, Kuz, that's okay, man. So, I don't know if the game was better or worse back then. It was just different. You know, you're a product of your environment. You and I came up in that same environment, and that's how we were taught the game of baseball. And that's all we knew. That's it. And like I said, I'm not saying it's better or worse now. It's just different. And for obvious reasons of salaries. I think they're protected by the salaries from the ball clubs. And I can understand that. You know, you have a lot of money invested in players, so they got to protect them a little more. You know, I don't know if I buy that to an extent. I don't fault the players. I really think the players want to play. I just think that they're kind of, you know, I don't want to say told, but the decision is not made for them, and they're looking at their investment, which is understandable, I guess.
Yeah, I did a show this past weekend, and, you know, I did a radio show at that Fanatics Fest, and they asked me a similar question. I said, you got to understand, you know, the game is about, today is about longevity. Yeah. The longer you play, the more money you're going to make. So now it's about preserving your health. You know, so guys, you know, back when we played, You know, I remember one year I got hit with a ball, and when I was playing in AAA, I got hit with a ball in the jaw, broke my jaw, and had surgery on it the next day. 5 days later, I was back in the lineup with pliers in my pocket in case I got sick. I could snip the wires off so I wouldn't choke on anything.
You'd be out two months.
You didn't dare give up your spot because, you know, there's guys coming along the pike. And, you know, and today I see, you know, everybody needs days off now, and everybody's got to learn how to rest and recuperate, and yet the injuries continue to flow. You know, we played through that stuff.
Yeah. Yep. You know, I I'm not too sure it's the smartest thing for us, and I can't tell you how many shots that I've gotten and just get shot up, cortisone, get out and play that day or the next day. I'm not too sure that's the smartest thing that we did, but we didn't know better. And I don't know, TC, for me, the proudest thing, or the thing that I feel, for me personally, doesn't matter what people think, but for me, I look back and my entire career, the one thing I'm most proud of is that I never, ever asked the manager for a day off or said I couldn't play, ever. That's what I'm most proud of. And I know when I was hurt, I know when I had cracked ribs and all this stuff and I had to play. Never said I couldn't play or never didn't want to play. Now, it's probably not the smartest decision. I mean, I play some days where I say, man, you don't belong on this field. But I just couldn't face the manager, or more importantly, I couldn't face my teammates knowing that I took a day off for rest. Just the way it was.
Yeah. Hey, you know, your years in Baltimore, and you were managing Baltimore, you got to see some pretty special situations in Baltimore. Tell me about your experience managing there.
Wow, it was probably one of the greatest. I loved it. We had a pretty good offensive team. We were a little short on pitching, but we made a run. You know, 2005, I worked for a tough owner. I worked for two of the toughest owners, Ed Angelos, and I worked for Steinbrenner at the same time. So, you know, and those two didn't like each other very much. Baltimore was great. I remember in 05, we kind of made a run for it, and it was unfortunate because that was the year that all that steroid stuff came out with the players, and we were in, like, late July, and we were only, like, half game out, and then the Palmeiro suspension came, and things just started to roll, unfortunately, in baseball. And it kind of just, it derailed a lot of stuff. And then, you know, like I said, in July, we were kind of fighting. We weren't as good as the Yankees or Boston at that time. Boston and the Yankees, two powerhouses. We might have been playing over our heads, but the fact of the matter is we were half a game out. We're going in late July, a game and a half out. And then that came out when I got fired like 2 weeks later. We're locked up. That's the one thing that I regret. I didn't like kind of finish that out there, but I had some terrific young kids, some terrific players there. Those were the years where Boston and the Yankees were just, you know, they were two powerhouses in that division. They were tough to beat.
Yeah. Well, you know, my years in Anaheim used to go into those, you know, Boston and New York, and I'll tell you, I used to tease Joe Torre in New York. I said, my gosh, you know, you just sit back on the bench and look who's pitching on the other team. And you'd give those, you know, all you would get Strawberry day off one day, and the next day you'd give Tim Raines a day off. And you got Hall of Famers sitting on your bench, for heaven's sakes. You know?
Yeah, you had a couple of Hall of Famers sitting on his bench. And I was there coaching for him. And, you know, when I went back, I was there in 2000 when we won the Subway Series until I went to Baltimore. Then I came back again in 06 after I left Baltimore. I didn't leave. They kind of told me to leave. So I came back. And it was funny, TC. I was sitting down with Joe one time, and you will appreciate this. So I go back as his bench coach. And now all of a sudden there's a different perspective of the game. So as a manager, I said to him one day, Joe, I said, you know something? I see more of the game now as your bench coach than I did as a manager. And he goes, why is that? I said, because as a manager, you're worried about who's going to pitch in the seventh inning. You're going to worry about if the guy's holding the guy on first base or he needs to play behind him. You're thinking about who you have to pinch hit next inning and all this. And while I'm looking at the game, you have to think all of these things. I'm going to present what I think, hey, you want to pinch hit back. But I see more of the game. Because you as a manager know that what's going through your mind, you got to be one, two, three innings ahead. And it was kind of funny. But when we were talking about that, and he goes, oh, that's interesting. It's an interesting look on that. I said, yeah. And the best part about the bench coach was when the game was over, I closed that book. I said, Joe, I'll see you tomorrow. You deal with the media for the next 2 hours. You know, a little different.
So are you still involved, Lee? Do you still have,
I'm kind of semi-retired. I still go around in both clubs and do a little ambassador work and see guys like you and just talk baseball. But, I don't know if I'm retired or semi-retired, but I'm bored, man. Our life is so predictable, and it's like, since we got into this game, we are on a schedule for 7 months a year, right? Say hello to your wife, I love you, in February, and I said, I'll see you in October. That's our life, right? It's tough life. But it's so regimented that we know what time the bus leaves, we don't know what time PP is. Everything is like on a military scale. It's like crazy. We know exactly where we have to be and what we have to do every hour of the day. And then all of a sudden it was like that, then it's not, you know, it's not. And it's an adjustment period, because my first year out of baseball, it was kind of cool because I never had a barbecue in, I don't know, 20 years, 30 years of doing all that. In July, and then we're going to the birthdays of our kids that we didn't do, recitals and all that stuff that we missed. But at the same time, you're in the backyard barbecue and you say, yeah, I should be at VP right now.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, Am I right? Did you go through that?
Lee, I did. I'm telling you, I did a function, I don't know, it was 2 months ago, and someone said, so, you know, what's it like? You know, now, you know, you do a lot of travel, you're taking a vacation. And I said, you know,
whoa.
I'm going to tell you something. I haven't had a vacation. I'm 75. Said I haven't had a vacation since I was 10 years old in the summertime. My game, my life, every summer for 65 years has been baseball.
Right.
I didn't have time to take vacations. And so I know exactly what you mean, what you're going through. So, when you know, get your clubs, let's hook up, let's go someplace, let's take a vacation together. Well, get some.
You know, it's funny you said that.
There are other guys out there like you and I that are looking for something to do too. So,
yeah, it's funny because after every season, your wife says, let's go away. I want to go away. Hey, go away where? That's the last place I want to do is leave my couch when the season's over. Am I right?
I'm
not going anywhere. No vacation.
No, yeah.
I'm enjoying my time.
6 months flying 100,000 miles all around the country. Yeah, we're not going anywhere for a while.
That's for sure.
Yeah, and then that's another thing about the game of baseball that I find is fascinating how players can do this now, because the travel. I mean, baseball to me over the course of a year is the hardest sport to play, not the actual physical game, but to maintain that level of greatness every single day. You have to play your game up to here. And it's almost impossible, because with the travel, you're getting at 4, 5, 6 in the morning every game, you know, on travel days. And then you got to go out and expect to play at that performance. Like, you know, when people don't realize the travel and you get in at 6 in the morning and you come to a game, they expect to see Aaron Judge at top of his game. They want to see home run, you know, and all the players, or Lindor, the guys. But, you know, they're dragging too. I mean, it's a grind. Baseball is a grind. Tough sport to play and maintain it over a full season. You know, Cal Ripken did is just phenomenal.
It's just, yeah, it's incredible.
You and I know, it's just phenomenal.
Well, you know, Lee, it's a little different for you. You were an everyday player. With me, I always look forward to those travel days when you know, hey, I might get in today. Because somebody might be tired.
No,
backup player might get in today. So, John, yeah, I know you've got some questions for Lee.
Oh, yeah. Thank you, Terry. Lee, I want to talk about those early days in Brooklyn. You played baseball. You also did some speed skating back when you were younger. What made you decide I'm going to go baseball and really try to make it as a player at a young age?
Well, first love. It's all I knew. You know, my dad, God rest his soul, you know, my dad knew nothing about baseball. Zero. Old school Italian. And the only thing he knew about baseball was Joe DiMaggio. That's it. You know, Joe D. And I'll tell you why I love the game. Because my dad, like I said, didn't know much about the game of baseball. He couldn't teach me the game of baseball. But he always said to me, have fun, enjoy it. But my dad, I'm going to tell you, was at every single game I played from when I was 18 until I retired from baseball at home. Because all he did was support me, be there for me. Knowing that he was there and my mom was there at every game at Shea Stadium. And that was probably the best part of the support that I got from my parents. My dad never said, what? How come you struck out? Or why'd you miss that ball? Or what happened? It was like, did you have fun today? Well, Pop, I don't know. I struck out 3 times. That wasn't much fun. But, you know, one of those things. And I was very lucky to have my dad and mom support me. And you know, growing up in Brooklyn, you know, we didn't have much. I mean, we had 5 people living in a 3-room apartment, giving out my sister, my brother. But it was good. I wouldn't trade it for the world.
And how special was it when you were drafted to a New York team? I mean, was that really special for you? I know you were Giants fans. So what was your preference during that draft, hoping where you'd go?
Didn't have one. My preference was to get drafted and play professional baseball. That was it. And in no way that I ever imagined, one, I didn't even know the Mets liked me to that degree. And to be drafted in the first round, no way. It just no way. I remember the day it happened. And back then, TC, you'll remember that this scouts came over to your house.
Right.
I had scouts come over to my house, have dinner with my dad. They went to the track together, the scouts. They talked about it. I mean, it was like crazy. It was like they came to my high school graduation. Like they were just, it's just a different time. And the scouts were so nice. And not that they're nice, not nice now, but it was like they were part of your family. And I remember getting drafted that day. And I was in school. Well, I was in school, but I wasn't in school. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Kind of walking around, and my coach came looking for me, and they couldn't find me at my high school. I was roaming around somewhere, and I came up a stairway, and he kind of caught me straight in my face right there. I went, "Oh Christ, I'm in trouble now." He goes, "Did you hear anything?" I said, "No, I didn't. No phones, right? They're back then, right. Telegraph, right?" So I said, "No, I didn't hear anything." He just looked at me. He went, "Mets," like that, and put a finger.
Oh.
I went, "Oh, I ran all the way home. It was about 2 miles from my school, and I ran all the way home, and I just got home, and my dad just gave me big hugs and stuff. So that's how I found out that I was drafted by the Mets. I really didn't have any inclination that I was going to be drafted by the Mets. Nope.
Well, you moved up pretty fast in the system. You made your debut in 76. And you were really touted as kind of like this face of the franchise, even as when you were debuting. I know that first season probably had the poster day of you. You really had a lot of pressure on you, but you became one of the most productive hitters in the lineups immediately. A lot of people were even comparing you in the early days to Willie Mays. So as a young prospect, how
much pressure? Yeah, I was a bad comparison.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's what some of the media was saying back in the day, you know. But, of course, yeah. Willie Mays, you know. But how much pressure did you feel in those early days as kind of the Mets were starving at that time for a matinee idol and a superstar? So they had a lot of pressure on you.
I don't know about matinee idol. That was a little blown out of proportion. But when I went back home, I got knocked out pretty quick.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, that didn't work.
Home to the Italian family,
Back then we didn't, in 70s after they blew Tima, they were starving fans and we didn't draw very much at all at Shea Stadium. So I could hear all my friends in the stands say, hey, where are we going tonight? They're like, hey, in your mind, I'm facing J.R. Richard, one of those things. I could hear them echoing. So I don't know. People keep asking that question about the pressure, and that's all I knew is playing there. I don't know what the best was. Some say I would have been a better player if I didn't play in New York. Probably. That might be true, too. But I wouldn't trade any of it for what I did. I wish that the team was a better team, that we were more competitive during that time. Every team goes through that rebuilding stage, I guess. The Yankees were at the top of the heap, and we were second fiddle in the city, obviously. So that I always felt I wanted to be part of. So I got that chance coming back in '86, which meant a lot. But at that time, I really didn't know better, to be honest. I really did not.
Well, you got traded to Texas in '81. You come back in '86 to a whole different franchise, a whole different dynamic. Correct. And then you also won with the Yankees as a coach. So talk to us about winning in New York and when you got back in '86 and how great that was to be part of that historic team, and then winning again with the Yankees several years later.
Yeah, well, Terry could talk about that. Terry came short, but when you were in that World Series, there was nothing like it, was it? There's no city like winning here. So I came back. And there's nothing winning a World Series as a player, that's sure. But then I came back, and then I also got a chance to win with the Yankees and go to, I think, three or four World Series with the Yankees. Winning in New York in the series is something that you wish every player can really get a piece of and to feel it. The only thing I regret, and that this the only big regret I had in baseball, I can tell you what my biggest regret was coaching in 2000 during 9/11. And when we lost the World Series to Arizona, it was my biggest regret because, we got beat up in Arizona, and then we came to New York, won three games, all those home run days. It felt like it was just destiny. We were meant to win. We were meant to go and have that Canyon of Heroes parade. 9/11, the city needed us to win desperately. And that's the one thing in my career that I wish that we could replay during 2001 series. That was a tough one.
Yeah, it was like the whole country were kind of Yankee fans year. And we do a lot of work here with Tunnel to Towers.
Yeah, it's funny you say that. Because where were you during that time? You say?
I was in Tampa Bay.
Okay. So
we were worried about winning championships.
Yeah. you were in Tampa Bay in 2001.
Yeah, I was coaching third base in Tampa Bay. We were working hard not to lose 110 games. That's what we were doing.
It's not an easy task, right? Losing 100 games. I got to tell you a story. I don't know if you have time for this. You'll get a kick out of this. Talking about losing 100 games. So, I think it was 1979. We are going into the last weekend of the season. And Joe Torre was managing. And we had 99 losses, right? You'll appreciate this, Pete. And so he comes in to me and he goes, hey, listen, I don't want to lose 100 games. We were at 99 losses. We had a doubleheader and two games to finish the season. We had four games in 3 days to end the season. And at that time, he says, listen, if you don't want to play, you know, that's fine. It's up to you. But I really don't want to lose 100 games. So now, going into that last weekend, I'm hitting .311, right? At the and he says, "Do you want to play?" And I went, "Well, one thing I told everyone, and me and my son, everyone, it was like Ted Williams: you play, you gotta play." I'm saying, you know what, Joe? I got a chance to hit .320. This is what I'm thinking. This is how I'm looking at this, right? Now, back then, TC, if you hit .320, you're up there, buddy. I play it every day. .320 back in '70, you know. Those are career years, you know, all those people. Right. I mean, if I hit .320, man, I'm going to make a name for myself in this game. So I said to Joe, yeah, I'll play. I got a chance to hit .320, Joe. Guess what, TC? We played four games, right? I go 1-for-17. 1-for-17 I go for. And I barely hit .300, right? Back then, listen. Back then, they didn't have your average on the scoreboard, right? There was nothing on the scoreboard. Hey, he's hitting .340, .240, whatever.
Right.
You don't know what you're hitting, right? And so now I'm like, first game, I'm like, oh, four. I think I had my one hit was a home run, and I went 0-for-5. Now I'm in the outfield in St. Louis. Listen, I'm in the outfield in St. Louis, right? I'm trying to figure out my average. I can't. There's nothing on the scoreboard. I'm trying to do long division in my head while I'm playing center field. So I'm saying I'm going to take 180. I'm going to add the two zeros. Oh shoot! I got to catch that fly ball. So now I'm trying to do long division in my head while I'm playing, and I know I'm 1-for-15. I'm like, I don't know what to do, and I got to go back at nighttime. And back then, you know, you didn't know what you hit until the next day when it came out in the newspaper, right?
Right.
They put the box over, and then you find out the next day, oh, geez, I'm 1-for-14. I said, 320 is out of the question. I said, I'm going to hit 300. So finally, the last game, I was like, I was shot, man. I was like, I'm done, man. And Joe pulls me out of the game. I still played the last game. And so he had a direct line to the press box, which he didn't tell me. He just let me play. And then he pulled me out like in the fifth or sixth inning of the last game. And he said, don't worry, I got you. And that's the old one. You guys, that's 303. I said, gee, thanks, Joe. I was ready to kill you, man. I went 1-for-17, PC.
Oh,
I didn't have
no.
a chance to play. But and then I said to myself, hey, Joe, real 99, 100, who cares, man? You know, but you got to play.
You got to play.
1-for-17. Gotta play. Play it out, man.
Yeah, that's why the people pay. The people pay to come to see you play, man. You know?
That's it.
Yeah.
Yep.
For sure.
Yeah, I got one last thing for you, Lee. You know, since you retired as a player, you coach, you manage, you announce for SNY. You got to see your son play in both the Mets and Yankees organizations. You make personal appearances, and you got a foundation for your brother. Fred L. Mazzilli.
Yeah, thank you.
Which I want to talk to you about as well, but because you have an upcoming benefit in September. But you're also very active on social media, and you have quite the singing voice in Italian these days with photos and videos with your family, especially your granddaughter, Sofia Malia, who you proudly call your Faccia Bella. So talk to us about the beautiful addition to your family.
Homework.
And it's just so enjoyable
to
see you singing to her and just the love, the passion So talk to us about that beautiful addition to your family, and then please talk to us about the foundation and what you got coming up.
Yeah, well, one, you know, until my granddaughter was born, I didn't know what the greatest gift in life was. You know, you have your kids and you pass that along, but she's a month old right now, and my wife and I were up here for the summer to really help out, and we've been there every single day, twice a day. They're a mile away, so that's kind of our joy right now. So that's been, I really didn't, you're talking about growing up in Brooklyn and playing, and now all of a sudden I'm a granddad. It's a full circle, so it is the most beautiful thing for me in the world, me and my wife, and so we're celebrating that. My wife and I, we've been married 40 years, and we thought we were going to have grandkids a little earlier, but we are enjoying every minute of it. So thank you for mentioning that. Yeah, my foundation is special. It's about my brother. I lost my brother a few years back to cancer, and I lost it was a terrible time in my life. It was going back about 10, 12 years now. That we were very, very close. Spoke 4 or 5 times a day, and he was always my, you know, the one I went to. You know, we were together for, let's say, 55 years growing up till he passed. And LTC, in 55 years, I tell my kids, we never, ever had a fight in 55 years. Not one time. Not once. And it was a difficult time. You know, we were supposed to grow old together. It did not happen. He died of cancer. And now what we do in his memory, and he was just an ordinary Joe. You know, that was it. Just a hardworking guy. And so we have this foundation that what we do is we give people from New York Presbyterian, Brooklyn Methodist Hospital, we raise money to get free CT scans for lung cancer parents. Because it's so expensive for the CT scans and the PET scans and getting them all that. So we supply free scanning for the people in Brooklyn. It's still hard and difficult because I wish I didn't have to do this. It's a good thing because we save people's lives, and I wish people come out. We have it at the Hard Rock Cafe in Yankee Stadium on September 19th. They're going to name, believe it or not, it's a fam. Let me just go back for a second. Our foundation is a family labor of love foundation. It's me, my wife, and my sister, and volunteers. And we are the ones. I could show you invitations on this table right now. My wife and I, we lit the envelopes. We put the stamps on. We do all that stuff. We don't have people on a payroll. We don't have anyone that does that other than our family. So it's a labor of love. It's a process. It's hard. It's not easy. But everything that we get, 100% of our money goes right to the hospital. No one makes a dime from this foundation. And this year that they're going to have an unveiling, that they're going to name a wing or a section in Presbyterian, Brooklyn Methodist, in honor of my brother, and it's going to be called the Fred Muzzilli Foundation, that sponsored these free screenings. And that, to me, is the greatest, greatest honor that my brother can have and my family, of having his name up in the hospital. So it's kind of special. We raise money. I wish we had the big sponsors. We don't. I wish someone would say, here's $1 million. But my motto is, you know what? Instead of giving me $1 million, have 1 million people give me $1, and they'll be more aware of this disease that is so deadly. It kills more people than breast cancer, colon cancer, combined. So everyone thinks it's a self-inflicted disease, which you think because you're smoking, you have lung cancer. And that's so far from the truth. People don't understand that. And they think it's self-inflicted, and it is not. So that's what we do. And hopefully this year we can raise some money and just keep on going. I mean, like I said, my sister and my wife and my kids, we are all in on it. And whatever we get, I'm a type PC where, you know, I ask for a donation, not when I don't ask. I mean, it's hard to ask. It really is. But people want to give. And I always say to them, they ask me, oh, how much do you need? How much do you want? And my answer to that is, guess what? Whatever you give me is more than I had yesterday. And that's how I look at that. So don't be afraid to get a CT scan. Be afraid not to get one, is what we say. And a lot of people just take it for granted that they don't get CT scans. So when you get your physical, get a CT scan. And we already saved one life, and that is like unbelievable when this patient came to us and said, if it wasn't for your brother's foundation, I wouldn't be here today. And I think just that alone put everything in perspective for us.
Yeah, I lost.
So I appreciate you.
Oh, no problem. I lost a sister, the same affliction at the age. She was only 57 years old. So very, very difficult. But that foundation and what you're doing with the Mustache Bash, I believe it's, called. Where can people go? What's the website URL, or how can they get more information about participating in that in that event?
Yeah, very, very easy. FredMazzilliFoundation.com, and you go right to our website and sign up, buy tickets. We have a great event, a lot of celebs. PC, I'd love to have you one year come up when you're around. You'll get a kick out of it. And Fred Mazzilli, you know, foundation.com or fredmazzilli.com, and donate whatever you can. You know, I'm there's so many charities out there, and you know, whatever you give, like I said, is more than I would have had yesterday. So we're looking forward to this year. And September 19th, Hard Rock Cafe, it's at Yankee Stadium, and we usually have a nice turn up. So thank you for talking about it.
Oh, you're appreciate quite welcome. That. It's been a pleasure to talk to you today, and I'm going to toss it back to TC. Thank you, Lee.
Okay.
Well, Lee, I know you got a lot going on today, but thanks for being on the show, and certainly what an honor to celebrate your brother's life by doing what you're doing, and to have his name at the hospital is certainly the family should be very, 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 very proud, and something you should be very proud of trying to get that established. So anyway, listen, we'll get together again. I love talking to you. I love sitting down and talking baseball with you anyway. And we'll hook up and we'll do it again sometime. Yeah. Thanks so much for being on today, and all the best. We'll talk soon.
I love talking to you, TC, all the time, my man. All the time. I love talking to you, baby.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me on, man. Thank you.
Bet.
Lee Mazzilli was a great guest, Terry. Just a fabulous guy. Thanks for bringing him on. It was great to hear those stories and also to talk about the charity work that he does in honor of his brother. So thank you again for bringing Lee on today.
Yeah, it was great. You know, he just showed you during that interview what a great person he is off the field. I mean, we all knew he was a great player, but this guy is a gentleman and a great father and a great grandfather. So it was great to have him on. I call him, it's fun for me to call him friend. We do a lot of things together down here in Florida in the wintertime, and I look forward to doing it again this winter.
Excellent. Now it's time for the Tunnel of Towers Amazing Hero of the Week segment. This week we pay honor to Major Paul Volke. Let's go to that right now.
There was something very special about Paul. My friends used to call him St. Paul, and he felt a responsibility to serve. He just was so proud to be in the military and knew that he wanted to make this world better. He deployed 5 times. Now he was a major. He was in Mazar-e Sharif, which is in northern Afghanistan. I was about to take my boys, who were 8 and 6 at the time. The doorbell kept ringing. I went to open the door and say, I'll be there in a minute. Give me a second. And I saw you know, the notification officers, and I shut the door because they asked to come in, and I said, no, you can't come in, and I shut the door. And then I like paused for a minute and said, you know, this is gonna happen whether I open the door or not, so I better open the door. And you know, then your life completely changes. When your spouse dies, all of a sudden you're like, there's no vision, there's no dreams anymore. We were relying on Paul's full pension. And so it was a struggle to provide a single family home for them. Tenosta Towers was going to pay off our house. It's unbelievable. Like, you just don't believe that someone is going to do this for you.
That shocked me, and my jaw dropped when I heard. And it's so crazy to think about how generous this organization has paid our mortgage.
Having to know that I'll never have to pay a mortgage or rent, there are still days I wake up and don't believe that it's happened.
It's very hopeful to me that there are so many people who are willing to dedicate not only time but money to this wonderful organization.
Because if you just think about how many people had to donate to support these homes being paid off, it's a lot. You know, a lot of people have to make this happen. And it just makes us feel like there are people that know our stories, that appreciate our sacrifice. And that just means so much.
Join us in supporting our nation's heroes and their families now. It only takes $11 a month to make a positive impact.
And we'll have another amazing hero of the week from Tunnel to Towers on next week's show. And Terry, before we close the show, we'd like to bring on Daniel Roven from T-Squared Social in New York City, where you will take part in their Mets Fest this Saturday. Let's say hi to Daniel. Daniel, welcome to the Terry Collins Show. What do you got going on this weekend?
John, TC, so happy to be here. Man, Mets Fest, hopefully the first of an annual event. It's just going to be a fan fest, you know. What we're doing here at T-Squared Social is, you know, trying to bring the best experience possible outside of actually going to the game, right? So we love doing these watch parties. Terry's been coming in since basically day one. He's one of our regulars, and it's been a lot of fun to get to know Terry and to get to set something like this up with a legend. So anyone who gets to come or anyone who purchases a ticket to come to T-Squared will get to hang out with Terry. It's got food all included. It's a really great package that I think we've come up with for this event, just trying to get everyone to have as good a time as possible and get to cheer on the Mets.
Well, I will tell you, Daniel, that, you know, every time I go in there, I have such a good time. I have such a friendly, great staff. I mean, it's entertaining, and the place itself, I mean, you can't have more fun. You go there, and you can't miss a sporting event. There are games to play. There are people to talk to. It is so fun and so entertaining that I'm looking forward to this Saturday.
Yeah, all we need next is the Lions to win, and then it'll be literally the best place on earth. But yeah, as you can see, I'm in one of our multi-sport bays right now. We have golf simulators, full swing simulators. The tees, if you didn't know, is Tiger and Timberlake. So Tiger Woods is one of our owners, as well as Justin Timberlake. So we're golf focused, we're entertainment and music focused. And yeah, like Terry said, we have 40 screens. We have the biggest TV in New York City. So we have a really great atmosphere for these watch parties where you can just be fully immersed with other fans. People are yelling at the screen as if they're on the first row at Citi Field. So it's a really great atmosphere. We do the best we can over here. We try and take care of everybody. Like Terry said, our staff is really great. So we're really excited for Saturday. And we're really excited to do more of these events, and hopefully the Mets, you know, can win some more games, get off to the playoffs, and maybe we do some watch parties then too. But yeah, we really love doing events like this and bringing in legends like Terry. It's a great opportunity to really reach the fans. The Mets will be here giving away tickets and swag. Vito and the guys at Meet at the Apple are going to be here doing some trivia. You're going to have guys like J-Mac, the OMG sign guy. He's going to be bringing some stuff to sell and to look at, I guess, that he's got the, anytime you see them, you know, in home run and they got the big OMG signs, that's my guy, Jerome, J-Mac. The little dog that eats hot dogs, Glizzy Izzy, he'll be here. So it's going to, I don't know if Grimace is on board yet, but we do have a McDonald's across the street. So I'm still trying to pull some strings, but yeah, it should be, you know, should be a really good time.
So Daniel, what time does that event start on Saturday?
Great question. So, It starts at four. You know, it's technically the first day of college football. So I believe Georgia Tech, Florida State's at noon. We're going to be open at noon. People can feel free to come anytime during the day. But when your ticket becomes valid for the food and all that is going to be at four. And then the Mets are in San Diego at 8:40. So, you know, if you can't come right at four, obviously, like, we're going to be hanging all night. We're going to try and have a lot of stuff for people to do, try out our simulators, interact with people and all of our activities. We also have darts, duck pin bowling. So we got a lot of fun stuff to do all day. You know, kind of come whenever you want, but the food and all that starts at four.
Well, that sounds like a great time. I'm really excited for it. And, you know, like I said, it's so fun to be there. When you guys first opened up, I went there and it was during football season. And my God, I had so much fun just talking to people, going from table to table and visiting. I'm looking forward to during baseball season when I have an idea what's going on the screen. So it's enough.
Hey man, no, don't sell yourself short, man. Last year was a good year for your Lions, and we're hoping for better. But you know, quick story about that, because the first time I met Terry, you know, your friend Stacy came in. I had never met Stacy, never met you. She asked for like one of the best tables in the house. I'm like, you know, this reserved for our members, yada yada. I went downstairs to the kitchen. I come back. I see Terry Collins sitting at the table. I never met you before, obviously. I'm like, Stacy, you got to lead with, oh, well, Terry's coming too. You know, Terry Collins coming. And the funniest part about that day was that another group of guys, you're going to remember them, were kind of upset at the table that they had received, right? Because we were already full by the time they got there. We gave them the best table we could. We tried to take care of everybody. We only have limited amounts of seats, right? So they were like, should we go somewhere else? Yada, yada. And then you came to say something to me, and the lady comes up to you, oh my God, this guy's the biggest Mets fan. Will you talk to him? And you came and you talked to them. And then all of a sudden, 2 seconds later, they're asking about membership. And I'm like, yeah, you know, Terry's basically not only a joy to have around, but like you said, incredible for the guests. I've never seen you not talk to anybody. You'll come in and talk to me about baseball for hours when no one's here. So it's been a real joy and pleasure to get to know you and get to have our guests interact with you. I know it's really special for everybody who gets that opportunity.
Well, we're looking forward to it. I can't wait, and we'll have a great time. I know that.
Awesome, Terry, man. I can't wait. I will see you this Saturday. Great. And so we have ticket links all over the place at our T-Squared Social Instagram, John and TC. I'll make sure you have the link. It's $40. So, I mean, and it really only, it's basically to cover the food and the staff. Where these are the kind of things that we do because I'm a fan, you know. I plan these to be things that I would want to go to. The $40 is like, well, you could just have one or two appetizers or something, or you could try basically our whole menu, eat at your leisure, have a great time, you know, hang out with the boys, hang out with Terry. So, really, for my money, it's a great value, and it's going to be a really good time. So we want to get as many people out there as possible. We want to be a Mets house, not a Yankees house. Okay, I want that to be one of our main objectives. I'm biased, but this has to be a Mets house. It's going to break my heart if we're a Yankees house, you know.
All right.
So thanks for all your efforts, guys, in that regard. I will make sure everyone has the ticket links. T Squared Social Instagram has it, and yep. We hope to see everybody on Saturday.
Thanks, Daniel.
And your location is right there.
And we're on 42nd Street. I should let everybody know where we are. We're right in the middle. Can't miss us. Wherever you are in the city or around the city, you can get to us. So look forward to seeing you.
Thank you, Daniel. Thanks for coming on, pal. I'll see you Saturday.
Thanks, Terry. Can't wait, guys.
Pal. Thank you.
All right.
Thank
you.
All right, Terry, that's going to wrap up another Terry Collins show. You can follow Terry on X and Instagram at @TerryCollins_10. And for those of you on Facebook, follow Terry there at the Terry Collins Show. You could follow me on X at John Arezzi, also on Instagram, same username. Make sure you subscribe now to the Terry Collins Show, available wherever you listen to your favorite podcast and on YouTube. Until next time, this is John Arezzi for Terry Collins. Have a great week, everyone.